What's up, and welcome to another exciting episode of NXpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of the hosts, Tim Mason. Here, as always, is Ricky D.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation?
Not too much. Patrick Murphy's also back.
Tim, you're the one that's back. You're back from basically playing the demo of MLB The Show, but in real life.
Yeah, sitting there watching people with their little stat books and making fun of them. Yep. I was, for anyone that doesn't know, I was on vacation, grand tour of California, Arizona. Got to watch some Mariner games, unfortunately. But that is neither here nor there. But you know what is here, you guys? Later on in the episode, we have a really exciting interview with one of the developers of Moolaka, one of the hit indie games on the Switch out right now. So make sure you stay tuned until the end of the episode where we'll have that. But before we get to that, we also have a really exciting segment where we're going to talk about Smash Bros. Because it is officially announced. And of course, we've got to dissect everything, discern who's going to be in it, and then make some hopeful predictions that we don't necessarily think will come true. But you guys, we promise each and every week that if you write us a review and give us a rating on iTunes, it could end up being read on air. And that's just what AJ Evans did. Adj Evans, you know who you are. He wrote us a really, really kind review that says 5 stars, informing, hilarious, and entertaining. Although there are a plethora of video game podcasts out there, this is one of the few video game podcasts I will listen to weekly. Keep it up. That means a lot to us because, in case you didn't know, there are 1.8 trillion gaming podcasts out there, I swear. There's a lot, so just that he listens to ours each and every week, that means something. So thanks so much for saying that. You deserve as many golden stars as you gave us.
Yeah, so. Seriously, thank you so much. And if you do listen to our show, like, we do put in a lot of work, and giving us a rating on iTunes, like, believe it or not, it helps us get review codes, and it gets us to E3. Like, all three of us have press passes, and even your co-hosts over at the Game Boys podcast have press passes. So, like, to get so many press passes for an independent website like GoombaStomp, like, it means a lot, and it's because of our readers and listeners. So thank you so much. And also, like, I feel like the younger generation, they don't seem to listen to podcasts so much. Like, they're always on YouTube. And I kind of feel like we need a video version, which is kind of complicated for the three of us. But who knows? Maybe in the near future, I'll, like, whip up some kind of video cast, like, as a spinoff show. But yeah, the point is, give us a rating on iTunes. Like, it'll be amazing.
Yeah, it really goes a super long way. So why don't we just dive into Smash Bros. Right away? I don't care how you guys have been, what you've been playing. No, I would ask you, Ricky, but before the show, you told us how many games you were playing. And it's a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week. I'm playing like about 8 games, so we don't have time for it today.
Yep. And Patrick, I assume you are just playing Skyrim because I know how that game goes.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I am about to start up a new indie game tonight that I've got a code for, and we'll be reviewing on the show in the near future here. But other than that, yes, it has been Skyrim and Moolaka. That's been pretty much consuming all of my gaming time.
Oh, so you got my email.
I did.
I really wanted to keep that review code for myself.
Oh, yeah. You shouldn't have given it to me then.
No, it's okay. I got too many games to play. I'm also playing Skyrim. We'll talk about it next week. We got more important things to talk about right now.
Mostly Smash, maybe the biggest game announcement for the year. We got in the middle of March, out of the blue, and I kind of love this. I'm really happy that Nintendo just dropped this on us at the end of the Direct, which you guys discussed last week. Go listen to that. And I'm guessing that was just to shut people up. But yeah, couldn't be more excited. But there's a lot of really, really important stuff to discuss with each and every Smash Bros. Games. It means that every fanboy out there needs to provide at least 100 different characters that they want to see in the newest iteration of Smash.
Dude, so I wanted to write an article, the 455 characters we want in Smash. Like, no one is ever going to be satisfied with any Smash game moving forward unless it's Super Smash Melee, and it has every single character ever.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. Go on any Reddit, you know, subreddit, and that's exactly what you'll find in the discussions. Everybody wants all their favorite people in Smash, but with melee mechanics.
I could get you probably over 800 characters, starting with Bulbasaur and then going through every Pokemon. So,
but that's what you got Pokemon Tournament for, right? Which, by the way, I love, and you guys should be playing. But let's talk about this. Let's talk about the lineup. Did you guys get the photo I sent you?
Yes. He just posted it on Workplace.
Yes, oh, okay. Mr. Murphy. Right. You're supposed to be looking at the photo. We're going to discuss the lineup.
I'm a little behind here. You guys are clearly the Smash savants anyway. I'm sort of a casual Smash guy. But yes, ooh, I'm looking at it right now.
I like that word, savant.
So if you haven't seen this trailer, maybe pause the podcast. It's about a minute long. Go watch it. You'll think you're watching a Splatoon trailer, but lo and behold, Smash Bros. Logo, everyone's on fire, but in a good way. And I couldn't be more excited. So we know for a fact that some characters will be in this, like 100%. We know that the Inklings are in it. That's cool. That's long overdue.
Well, do we?
Well, they absolutely were in that trailer. I mean, of course.
A trailer they have characters and not have them be in it. Yeah. We know that Mario is in it.
Do we?
And we know that Champion Link from Breath of the Wild will in some way, shape, or form be in the game. Maybe not as a new character, but maybe just
again
aesthetically new.
We're going to talk about the lineup. So you guys got the photo, which is a screenshot of the trailer with all the characters lined up in silhouette. So we're going to go through it from left to right. But before we do, Tim, Patrick and I discussed this last week. I want to know, do you think that this is a port with additional characters and or a brand new game?
I think it's a brand new game. Otherwise, they are already mismarketing it. And I think that with the Switch, that is the opposite of what Nintendo has been doing. I think they've realized kind of the error of their ways. So I think maybe on the Wii U, there could have been like an accidental like trailer like this, and it was actually a port, and everyone would be disappointed. That's not the case here. I highly doubt it. It might be similar to the most recent game, but I am very skeptical that it's a port. And the people that are afraid that it is, just think about what they showed us. Like, that's the worst way to market a port ever.
Right. Okay. So let's start with the lineup. So let's go from left to right. So looking at the screenshot of the silhouette image at the end of the trailer with the fire behind all of the, I think it's like 11 characters, at the very far left, we have what everyone assumes is Yoshi. But
sure, it makes sense. He'll probably be in there.
Could it be Bowser Jr.?
It's possible. There are shapes. I mean, the nose is telling me Yoshi. That's too
big.
It looks
more like Yoshi.
Yeah, it does. But it is always possible because Bowser Jr. has been portrayed with that sort of big mouth nose thing. So
the thing is, we're looking at a screenshot in which someone from the internet sort of like penned out all of these silhouette images to sort of like enhance the image. And so the way he or she, you know, I guess traced the quote unquote, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the outline of the characters
the
or shapes. This looks like Yoshi based on the way they traced it now, but it could also be Bowser Jr. But chances are Yoshi is going to land in Smash over Bowser Jr. because who the hell really cares about Bowser Jr. at this point?
I mean, you're talking original cast member who's been in it since the beginning versus one that was only in the most recent iteration.
He is Bowser Jr., though, is the focus of the new Mario and Luigi remake inside Bowser's.
Because that means a lot.
Which is also in the 3DS.
I'm just telling you, could that be hinting at Bowser Jr. in Smash?
I mean, he was already a character, so it's not like... It wouldn't be... It's not a stretch to say, like, oh, yeah, he's probably returning. He's maybe returning.
Like, this is clearly a starting lineup. And I don't think Nintendo's going to release a new Smash game like Smash 5 with, like, 34, 40 characters in the roster. I think they're going to release a game with maybe, like, 15 characters in the roster. And after release... DLC, so you know each month they'll release like a new character. I could see that happening, which I would be.
Well, there's also
with.
Plenty of unlockable characters that you always have to get.
We should go through who they have first before we.
So next in line, I'm assuming. Well, actually, I'm not assuming.
Pit.
Well, I mean, yeah, Pit's the obvious choice, right? I'm guessing it's Pit, but it could be Marth or Ike.
I've also seen this one. people think that maybe, just maybe, it's Greninja.
Okay.
There, no.
This one's got an odd shape, so it's possible that this could be several different things. It all depends on what the pose is. So, yeah, I mean, I think Pit's still a fairly safe bet, though, especially for like this.
I think Pit's a safe bet. I mean, he's been part of the NES roster since the NES days, Kid Icarus, so I'm going to place my bets on Pit. Next in line is clearly Peach. So
next in line is clearly Donkey Kong.
Do you mean Donkey?
You monster person.
There's no mistaking that head.
Wait
so.
A minute. What if Peach gained a lot of weight and changed her hair? I'm just saying.
What
it
if
be
it's,
Peach?
What if it's actually the rabbit Donkey Kong?
No.
Nah, she's still single, Ricky. She's not going to gain weight yet. Mario Odyssey didn't end with a marriage, so.
We are making so many people mad right now.
But the next one is clearly Peach, obviously.
Looks like a crown.
According to that outline, but I'm not sure I agree with that outline on that one.
Wait a minute. The next one, we're on number four here.
Yeah.
No, there's someone in between Donkey Kong and Peach.
I agree.
Just the next highlighted one.
Well, here's the thing. That could either be somebody in between or it could be the same shape. I don't know. Like, this person made it Peach, but I'm not sure that this wasn't all one character, that they didn't get this outline wrong. That outline is one of the most iffy ones to me.
So, I mean, I recommend you also pull up an actual screenshot of the without the outline, like without someone drawing over it, like from the actual trailer. But in between, there is an additional character, which could be, I mean, here's a weird thing. It could be Rosalina. It could be Falco. It could be Mewtwo. I don't think it's Mewtwo at all. And I'll tell you why. I think all the Pokemon are on the far right. I would guess that they're not going to put Rosalina and Peach in the starting lineup. Like, it's either going to be Peach or Rosalina. I'm guessing it's going to be Peach. I could see Rosalina being an unlockable character or a DLC.
They're more likely to throw Pauline in, I think, than Rosalina this
exactly.
time.
Exactly. I think if there's someone in between, if there is, it could be a character like... most likely like Falco.
Yeah, I don't know. Part of me thinks that Peach is more likely because she's been a starting character in the past couple of games. And just like based on history.
He's talking about what's in between Peach and Donkey Kong.
Okay.
That weird that weird brown area with points.
Yeah.
For any Arrested Development fans out there.
So number five is got to be Peach.
Yeah, that one is pretty clear. There's like a little crown that you can see. And this is where it gets questionable again.
Unless it's immediately, Rabbit Peach, which would be awesome.
Oh, yes, a rabbit. I never even thought that they would be in this game. But of course, that makes perfect sense that they have a high chance.
Then next to her, we've got what this person is thinking is maybe Ness.
I guess so.
there's no way to know for certain. Honestly,
like I've like looking at the original screenshot and then looking at several screenshots that have been floating around Twitter. I think it could be Ness and or Lucas, and because it looks like it's a character whose head is shaped like Ness and is wearing a ball cap. So it could be Lucas. But the thing is, someone on Twitter shared another screenshot where they thought that Lucas could be standing next to Ness. So, like, basically the actual silhouette, we're seeing the characters in the back, but not necessarily all the characters in the front. So, technically, because there's 19 characters in this picture, there can actually be more to 19 characters. But I'm going to put my bet on one of the characters from the Earthbound series, and I'm going to guess Ness. Which brings us to number seven. And number seven is tricky.
This person who did the tracing thinks that it's maybe Marth or one of the Fire Emblem characters.
Well, and one of the many Fire Emblem characters,
I guess so.
Sure.
It's a taller humanoid, maybe wearing a cape. Yeah, okay. Saying it's a Fire Emblem character feels really safe to me.
It could also be Bayonetta.
I don't think it. Bayonetta standing still like that. I don't believe that for a second.
I don't see her shape in that.
Nope.
The thing is, for a starting lineup, I don't see a Bayonetta being part of a starting lineup. Like, I see her being unlockable or a DLC.
I would imagine she'll be in it with three coming out. But like, sometimes you get some characters that return, and some are just kind of guests for one game. And like Bayonetta, because she's got a new game exclusive on the Switch, I'm sure she's coming back. I don't know. I could be wrong. I thought Mewtwo would come back for Brawl, and he didn't.
So that brings us to number 8, which is clearly Donkey Kong.
It's actually a new version of Mario clearly wearing Cappy.
Okay, yeah, so it's Mario wearing Cappy.
It's not even Mario wearing Cappy, it's Mario.
It's just Mario. Yeah, the version they, the larger version they showed of the, of you know Mario didn't have Cappy on, so.
No, did not. Which does not mean that you can still maybe switch outfits and still have Mario with Cappy.
Yes.
Right. So number 9 is obvious.
Yep.
This is where Link's sitting there.
Well, so like we're guessing that clearly it's Link with the costume from Breath of the Wild, right? Because why not? Like, why would you not have?
Well, and we already saw him in that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Close up, it was clearly Breath of the Wild Link, no hat, mm-hmm. wearing the hero's tunic.
So here's the interesting thing, because I'm looking at both screenshots. The screenshot without the drawings, like the outline, and then the screenshot in which someone online went and outlined every character. And so looking at number 10, it looks like a blob. It looks like a blur. And then when I look at the dude's screenshot, it's like, could it be Luigi?
Wait, what?
After number 9, which is clearly Link, there is an additional character standing in the front of Link and in front of what we're assuming is like Sheik. And so you don't really see it in the screenshot that I sent you guys, but there is an additional character standing there in which a lot of people seem to assume it's Luigi, which would make sense because not having Luigi in a starting lineup would be odd.
Oh, he'll be there. Luigi will, of course, be there. Absolutely. And especially since Luigi's Mansion is coming out and, you know, all that other kind of stuff. Again.
The point is, in between Link and Sheik, there is a character standing in front of them, which is most likely Luigi, which brings us to number 11, which is Sheik or Zelda.
And this one, it looks a little bit more like Sheik, and it looks like it's Sheik doing this, like, very Sheik, like, kind of arms folded pose. And I think that's where people are getting this, and I don't think it's a stretch at all. So, this is where it gets, like, another, like, tricky spot is just below Sheik. It looks like there are maybe two smaller characters. It looks like we maybe are seeing Pikachu ears. And then something round, which is like Kirby, maybe?
You think Kirby, not Jigglypuff?
Kirby, for sure, over Jigglypuff. But, I mean, going back, that Ness that we're assuming is Ness could totally be a Jigglypuff also. It's like a small, round character. You really, there's no saying who it is. But Kirby seems to make the most sense.
Yeah, I would have to guess it's Pikachu and Kirby, and these are the two characters that are standing in front of Sheik and Samus, which is number 14, so we're at 14 characters right now.
And then we've got another mystery humanoid character right next to Samus.
People are saying that's Roy.
I honestly think it's Roy. That's the first impression I had, it's Roy. Some people think it could be Marth.
Yeah.
Some people think it could be Captain Falcon. I don't see Captain Falcon.
No, I don't see Captain Falcon in that. Doesn't have the shoulder pads for it.
But that said, going back to Sheik, some people say that's Captain Falcon, and that's not Sheik.
Well, it's always possible. I mean, anybody can be turned a certain way. I mean, these are just guesses. Nobody's definite. I mean, except for things like Bowser and Donkey Kong.
It's because Captain Falcon usually has his arms crossed. That's the kind of pose he has.
Right, exactly.
On most covers, whereas Sheik doesn't always. Not always. But yeah, I would place my bet on Roy. And like, I think, like I said, we got to have a Fire Emblem character, which is why I think the one on the far left is Pit. And I think this is the inclusion of a Fire Emblem character, which I think would be Roy.
So
I would be Ike.
I've seen another picture that makes sense for that character next to, Samus as well. That is Zelda.
And that's, I don't think a stretch either.
Yeah, there could easily be, you know, some flowing dress robes on there and a cape kind of thing, and yeah.
Right next to that character, though, we should just keep moving because we haven't even gotten to the fun part of this discussion. Because we're basically just listing all the characters that we know are going to be in it, no matter what.
Yeah, exactly.
So, let's not speculate on this too much. Bowser, right next to that, is one of the only ones that it's like 100%. There's no doubt in anyone's mind that it's Bowser. And then real quickly to close it off, this person is speculating That next to Bowser is Fox. Of course, Fox is going to be in the game, but I don't know if that's him right there. Could be. Right next to Fox, people think it's maybe Captain Falcon.
Mm-hmm. Or Ganondorf.
Or Ganondorf. I think Falcon's a guarantee because he's been in every game. So I don't know if that's him, but he'll be in there. And then the last one, maybe Wario?
Or Olimar.
Yeah. Or,
looks even fatter than Olimar.
Yeah, Olimar's shorter than that, I think.
So yeah, his head's big, but his body's not. This dude clearly has some girth. That's a Wario all the way.
Yeah, that's just some people's impressions of the picture from the end of the trailer. It could be anyone. Really, it could be Sephiroth standing in the flames, watching Cloud's hometown burn. Like, who knows? We really don't know at this point. But what I really want to know from you guys, and I think more fun than a discussion of the obvious characters, is the characters we think are going to be in it, but not that have been revealed yet. So I think there are a couple of obvious answers to this for characters that you can almost guarantee are going to be in the game, just kind of gimmies. And I'm going to steal the first one and say, is it Springman? Is that his name from ARMS? Like, if he's not in here, I am going to be genuinely shocked.
I can see Nintendo including a character from ARMS if only to promote ARMS, because they're really pushing that game. They might want to release a sequel. I mean, they're really pushing even the competitive scene for ARMS, despite the fact that the game's been out for like over a year. And it's not mega popular. Like, it's sold enough copies, but it's not as popular as like even like Pokken or Smash or any of the other fighting games. I could see that happening, but I'm not sure if that's an obvious choice. That's kind of like more of I don't even know if you're hoping
Nintendo created a fighting game and you don't think they're going to put the new mascot in their like mash 'em up brawler.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it already is a fighting game. Exactly. So I don't know. It's possible, but it would be kind of redundant, don't you think? You'd have a fighting game character in another fighting game. I mean, you could do it, but
like it can work two ways. It can hurt ARMS in a sense that, well, now you're playing a better fighting game with a character from ARMS, or it can help ARMS in a sense that it's promoting ARMS. But I think it'll actually hurt ARMS. Not that I don't think
it could do anything to hurt ARMS. I don't think people are gonna necessarily say like, oh, why even have ARMS as a game? They're totally different fighters. Smash Bros. Is its own genre of game. I think that anytime Nintendo features any character, it's, if anything, a promotion and a potential for revival. Like, we got Kid Icarus Uprising after Pit showed back up because all of a sudden people were interested in the character. No one cared about the Ice Climbers one bit until they were in Smash Bros. Fire Emblem probably wouldn't be where it is without the characters like Roy and Marth showing up and Melee back in the day. So I really think that it could only help. It couldn't hurt in any way.
That's fair. In terms of like who we can expect to see, I mean, you know, any one of the major characters from like the Super Mario Brothers series, like Waluigi, Wario, Peach, Yoshi. But I would love to see, like, this is going to be like a really odd pick, but a character like a Koopa Troopa or Boo, which I know sounds weird. Like, how would you use Boo in a Smash game? But I mean, like, sort of like in a sense where Rosalina has
Luma. Yeah.
Rosalina has Luma. Like, imagine if they had like Luigi from Luigi's Mansion with like Boo somehow, like if they somehow incorporated Boo into the game. I really want sort of like a Luigi's Mansion stage and some kind of Luigi's Mansion theme running through this game at one point.
I mean, they already have a Luigi's Mansion stage.
But I want it in this one with additional characters and Luigi with the vacuum cleaner. Like, I just want a whole, like, because the thing is, we're getting Luigi's Mansion, the remaster for 3DS. Most likely we're going to get Part 3 for the Switch. So I would love to see that come back.
And, like, people have been wondering if maybe Luigi Vacuum could be his own character for...
Wait, the Poltergust? Oh, Luigi Vacuum. Okay, Vacuum will be its own character.
No, really, Luigi with Poltergust. Now it could also be part Sniper, thanks to Kingdom Battle. So I doubt that'll happen, but it could happen. Could be fun. I feel like we're going to get something more from Odyssey. I think Odyssey.
Well, I mean, we might get Mario with Cappy, but what else could we get? We're not going to get those bosses.
No, not the bosses, but think about all the transformations that Mario has. think about him, how he throws his hat in that game. I feel like maybe Mario might fight a little bit different. I don't know. That's like you're getting into dangerous territory a little bit.
I honestly think that's going to be a given. We're going to get Crash Bandicoot in the game because, like, it's just really? The fact that but the fact that Crash Bandicoot is back on a Nintendo system. The last time he's been on a Nintendo system was like a 3D, the 2DS, like way back in the day, I think, right? And I think like it's like they somehow had a meeting where like, look, we want to put this character in Smash, and they agreed to it, and then at the same time they also agreed to release the game on Switch. I really, 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 really believe it's going to be either an unlockable or a DLC character.
Oof, I don't know about that one, but
it would just be a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, we talked about this a bit on Game Boys. I kind of would like to see Champion Link as his own character that uses his tablet rather than like the traditional items that Link has, because that's truer to the Breath of the Wild Link.
He should have breakable weapons.
Well, that would be, I mean, if you can press over A, and rather than him pulling out his sword, he hits you with a spear or something, you know? Like, that could be really, really cool. And he could drop some blocks on people.
That would be three Links, though. I mean, if they keep Toon Link and then just regular, like, Twilight Princess Link.
It's not too much. I really don't think it's too much. If we already have Dr. Mario and Mario, and Upside Down Mario, a.k.a. Wario.
True, true. They could... Well, first of all, they're probably going to cull the herd a little bit, don't you think? So some people like Dr. Mario may get the
maybe axe. Maybe get the axe. I think that Duck Hunt's probably gone. I think Pac-Man's probably gone. Cloud, unfortunately, is really not safe. He is probably in the snake position where it's like people want him back, but it was just like a one-time deal. But Sanic's going to be there for sure.
Rob's gone.
Get rid of Xenoblade dude. Whatever the hell his name was.
Rob has shown up in
Shulk,
two games now, so I think Rob could return.
I mean, I would like to see them all return. And here's the thing. So I don't know how hard it would be for them to make a brand new game and then somehow take like the coding of those characters from the previous game, but the two games are very similar, and easily be able to add those characters into this new game, because I see it being released with 20 characters. And then every month for an entire year, they release an additional character. And that's how they're going to boost the promotion for their online system.
I don't know. That sounds like you're asking for a lot. I think it's cool. But like, I think maybe more of like a Splatoon release schedule could be really, really amazing.
You think I'm asking for a lot? The last Smash game has like 45 characters, if not more.
Yeah, but then to release them all as DLC, like people would get really, really salty.
Doesn't have to be paid DLC.
Exactly. You just have to be part of the online, whatever.
You have to remember that no matter what, if you ship something without a lot of characters and then you keep releasing them, the audience will call the game unfinished at launch and they will be mad about it. I think you have to have a certain amount of a roster, like a pretty big roster that is at least equivalent to Brawl. Maybe not as big as Smash 4, but pretty consistent with where they've been in the past couple of games, and then maybe sell a season pass that releases more. I don't think it's fair for us to ask for new characters for free. Honestly, it's too much work if you think about balancing a game like this. Free characters, I don't think will ever happen unless it's a cool promotion.
I like Rick's idea from a logistical perspective, because this game, even though it has been in development for a long time and everybody's shocked that it was coming out this year and everything like that, like, oh, it's too big, it hasn't been long enough. It has been long enough since the
4 years
a Smash game. However, this gives them additional time to polish off characters. You know what I mean? Like you say, it is a lot of work putting new characters in. And if they are really trying to make a splash with Smash 5, and they'll want a lot of new characters, and that means fine-tuning a lot of new people, you know, so maybe a little bit of that gives them the opportunity to release this year and say, hey, we got Smash out, but it also gives them the opportunity to include all the characters that they want over time.
They could be honest about it up front. They could be like, look, you're going to get, because I think Smash Brawl had 35 characters, if I'm not mistaken. So they could be like, you're going to get, say, 20, 25 characters. We're going to release additional characters in 3 months time. You're going to get an extra like 10 characters or something. I think it would be more beneficial and also a lot more fun if they release one per month.
Yeah, it's just a lot of work. I think if they did it right, they could do it. But then at that point, would they just be withholding the stuff that they've already built and then releasing it slowly? It's like there's a lot of questionable stuff with that. It could be really cool, but I can also see it as semi-problematic.
But here's the thing. Based on the lineup that we read out earlier, or speculations, and based on what we can see slightly from the silhouette, that lineup, minus maybe Mr. Game & Watch, although he could be there, is identical to Melee. So what if this is Super Smash Bros. Melee Part 2?
Honestly, if people are calling for Melee Part 2, it already happened. It's every other Smash Bros. Game, guys. Like, get over it.
I'm just talking about the initial lineup. Like, the only person we did not mention that's in Melee is Dr. Mario. We mentioned all the other characters when we're reading through the list, looking at that silhouette image.
We didn't say Ice Climbers.
Oh, right.
Or Pichu was in that game, as well as Mewtwo.
We mentioned Mewtwo, though.
We mentioned him, but I'm not certain he'll be in the game. He should be. He's cooler than Mario.
There's a lot of characters that we can say we can be, you know, most likely included in the game. We just mentioned a few. Fire Emblem comes to mind because the guy's in love with the Fire Emblem series, and he released, like, so many of them already in the last game.
They need to trim fat, and that's where they need to start.
I think so.
For sure.
Yeah. But the thing is, I really think that they should include characters from games like, say, Box Boy, like QB. Like, why can't he be in the game? Like, why not shine a spotlight on some characters who need a spotlight shined on?
Think about how fun they could make that character where he, like, attacks by producing boxes to punch people and then, like, throws stuff at people. That could be really, really cool. I love QB. So, yeah, let's get a little bit more wild. Do you guys think we're going to get the champions or at least one? I think Daruk would fit right in.
I like Revali better as a
fighter. I like it better, but I just think Daruk would make more sense as a character because of his ability.
I like Revali better. I don't think you can include one and not include all four.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Well, do you really need Mipha? She's not really a fighter.
I just don't see them including just one. Like, I think, like, I honestly do see the champions included in the game, maybe as unlockables or DLC, guaranteed 100% for sure. But you're not going to get one. You're going to get all four, which is a good thing.
See, I always see that as not, I don't know. I hate when you have I don't like when you have a bunch of characters from one game. Like, I didn't like all the Fire Emblem characters that were in the last one.
No one but the director does, Patrick.
So I don't want to see half the game be made up of Zelda characters either, just because Breath of the Wild was popular. You know, I mean, one of the cool things about Smash Brothers, at least when it, you know, the original versions, was that it would kind of celebrate Nintendo's history. And Breath of the Wild is too new to have tons of stuff. Like, if you want to throw Champion Link in there, that's fine. And if you want to throw one other champion, that's fine. But man, I don't want to see five of them and taking up roster spaces from other classic characters. They're not classics. I didn't even, you know, I mean, honestly, they didn't really even resonate that much with me.
But here's the thing, like, we don't even really need them because Link gets their power in the game.
More reason that Champion Link should be a new character. Yep.
Right. Yes, so that's true. Technically, yes. We don't need them. They can have the characters included, say, in the background. You hear the voice. You see an image of them floating in the background.
Oh, I'm totally cool with that.
Right. Yeah. But I agree with you. Like, to be honest, like, I talked about this game called Brawl Brothers, like, I don't know, a few weeks ago, right? It's an independent, like, video game. It's on Switch. It's sort of like a total clone of Smash. And it
It's called Brawl Out, I think.
Sorry, Brawl Out. And it's such a clone, you can forgive me for getting confused. But it has, like, a bunch of characters from independent video games included in the roster. So it has, like, an original roster, and it has characters from, like, for example, Hyper Light Drifter and the character from Guacamole. So I'm just like, Nintendo.
Guacamole. You mean Guacamelee?
Guacamelee.
I mean, that's already they're stealing Nintendo's idea of guest characters. And, like, let's all just say it. It's time for Shovel Knight to actually be in Smash. He actually won over Bayonetta when they did the fan competition. Shovel Knight actually won. It's time for him to be in here.
That's what I'm saying. Nintendo, like, get the indie characters in the game because we love those characters.
Also, speaking of classic characters that we all resonate with, Travis Touchdown.
Okay, so game.
He's back.
He's a good candidate for sure. I mean, for sure. And it's a good way to promote his game. I mean, you guys already brought up the character that I want to see the most, which is QB. And I believe QB has earned his place as box boy. He needs to be there. Plus, it's like simple aesthetic would be a nice stark contrast to all the color. But yeah, Travis touchdown is a good one. I mean, it definitely makes sense. And I'll bet Suda 51 would love to have him in a smash
game. Oh my gosh. I'm sure he would just lose his mind because he loves to do that.
As expected, we're publishing a list over at Goomstomp in which all of our staff is picking one character that they want to see included in the game. We've already mentioned the two picks by Tim and Patrick. Now it's time for my pick. And I'm sorry, guys. I know people have been saying this for years, but I have to go with Simon Belmont.
That's an awesome pick. I mean, I wish it could coincide with a new Castlevania on Switch. But yeah, Simon Belmont's awesome. You know, it's not like... It's doable, too. Like, there's no reason why it couldn't, except that everybody hates Konami right now.
Or, you know what? They could also just go straight with Alucard.
I like Simon. Simon's classic. He's awesome.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if you go with the hit game, Symphony of the Night, plus that's already a platformer in a faster-paced environment, kind of like Smash Bros. I don't know. Yeah, so wrapping up, keep it tuned to Goomba Stomp, where there will soon be an article of all sorts of characters that our team wants to see. I could go on all day. I've got a lot of ideas. A lot of games that no one else remembers, like Botan Kaitos and Golden Sun. I want the characters from both of those games in there. I've been saying that for years, but I'm alone.
You are alone in that.
I am super alone in that, but I won't shut up. So, let us know what kind of characters you want to see by sending us an email or messaging us on Twitter, Instagram, wherever. We would love to hear from you. But that does it for the segment. A little bit long. When we come back, an interview with one of the devs from Mulaka, so don't go anywhere.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. We have got a very special guest with us here to talk about Mulaka for the Nintendo Switch. Let me introduce Adolfo Aguirre, the PR and publishing manager over at Lienzo. Adolfo?
Hey, hello there. Thanks for having me. It's a big honor. I love doing these kinds of shows. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, so... Mulaka. All right. So we've all played it. James reviewed it for our site, our Nintendo editor. And I think it's safe to say, Rick, it sounded like when we were talking about earlier today, you enjoyed it quite a bit. I know I'm about halfway through the game right now, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. Awesome. So and James, you wrote a very positive review. So we're interested in learning a little more about this game. But Rick, I know... Before we get in too deep into it, Rick has his tradition. The NExpress Nintendo podcast has your tradition of asking 5 questions to any new guests.
That is right. And I got 5 great questions, Patrick, and you're going to love the very first question. So Patrick and I are huge movie buffs. We love movies more than video games. So I want to know, what is your favorite movie from Mexico?
Oh, wow. My favorite movie from Mexico. Okay, that's a good question. You got me on that one. I guess that would be a movie called Amores Perros.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that one, that's a movie that's very, maybe a bit, it's a dark movie. It's a bit probably cruel in tone, but I think it's a very well executed story. I really like how it tells a couple of different stories, separate stories it seems, and then it kind of links them together in very clever ways. I really like that one. I think that's probably my favorite one.
I still think it's his best film. Like, he's made a lot of movies since. I think it's still his best film.
I agree. Yep.
See, my personal favorite films are from Louis Buñuel, The Young and the Damned, which I believe in Spanish is Los Olvidados. I love that movie. Yeah. All right. Question number two. This relates to video games. What is your favorite video game of all time?
That's easy. It's Super Mario 64. And I know that Mario 64 is not the best Mario game. That title for me, that goes, I know it's a bit soon, but that goes right now for me to Mario Odyssey. And it's not the best 3D platformer out there. However, it is the game that brought me here. Mario 64 was my very first game back when I was a small kid. And it was the game that just made me fall in love with this medium. And it's the game that made me, in many ways, the person that I am right now. So it's easily the most important game of my life. So that's why it's my favorite game of all time.
It's a pretty amazing game. So yeah. for young listeners who are listening who want to work in the video game industry, even if it's doing PR, for example, what advice would you give them?
Just do it. I mean, the video game industry is a very, very big industry, and any big industry always, of course, has positions. And just look at us. We are 8 people in a city that, I mean, I don't want to talk bad about anything, but to be honest, Chihuahua, Mexico is a city that is very much stuck in the 20th century, both in its culture in many ways and in its economics. There's not much technology or software development in this area, and we managed to make a video game in the city. If we could do that in here, you can. You know, it's perfectly possible. Just pick what you want to do. As you said, I mean, there's PR. Because many people think that if I want to make a game, I need to be a programmer. I need to know how to code. And that's not true at all. I do not code, and I work in games, you know. You can do programming. You can do art, animation, production, brand management, marketing, business development, even legal. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can do to work in the industry. So just pick what you like the most and just go with it, become the best at it, learn about it, form a team with people from other areas that you did not work in, and just make a project together and just get into it. It's a lot of fun, but it's also very challenging. It requires a lot of discipline. It requires you to just make something from start to finish and just put it out there, you know? Just do it. It's absolutely possible. And if we could make it happen, there's nothing that can stop anyone else from doing it.
We like to encourage young people these days to read more, especially with the internet. People seem to read more, but a little bit less of everything, you know? It's kind of like browsing through articles or social media. So if you can recommend something to read, like be it a book or a magazine and or even a website, like what would you recommend?
So sticking to the topic of game development, I would recommend aspiring developers to read stuff on Gamma Sutra. Mm-hmm. That's basically like the game development hub for information, for learning stuff from not only programming, but many different fields, a lot of marketing and PR stuff in there as well. And if you like, if you specifically like the PR field in the gaming industry, I think it's very important to read editorial articles from Kotaku, Polygon, even IGN and GameSpot, you know, those kinds of sites. Reading the way these editors write and express about games really gives you a very good insight into how to market your own game.
All right, and question number 5. This one's a little tricky. Okay. If you had to live inside a video game for a year, which video game would you choose to live in?
Oh, wow. Oh, man. So there are 2 video games that came to mind immediately. The first one was The Witcher. But to be perfectly honest, there are quite some problems in The Witcher world. I don't know if it's the best place to live in terms of, I don't know, public health and it's safety, you know?
A dangerous world you've been.
It is. But my second pick, and I think I would go with this one, that will be Mass Effect, I think. I mean, yeah, there are the Reapers and all that crap coming, but, you know, there's a lot of cool technology and traveling in space. And people, I mean, people in this Mass Effect series, in those cities, they seem to live very nicely, you know? So, yeah, I think that would be a big... Also, I'm a sucker for multiculturalism. Like, I like interacting with people from different countries and different places in the world and learning from their cultures and their ways of living. Now, taking that to a galactic level, you know, like being able to meet people from other planets, other races, sign me in. Like, that sounds very cool and exciting.
Absolutely. That's why I love Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think you passed the test. It's not really a test, but I love your answers. Like, I think that's the best response we've had so far. So,
that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So, with that, I think it's time to dive into Mulaka a little bit. I guess my first question would be, well, it's obvious. Okay, you go into sort of why what inspired you guys to make Mulaka a little bit about the history of northern Mexico. Could you go into some more specifics about that? Absolutely. About what specifically got you guys started on Mulaka?
Absolutely. So, like, every one of them, so we are all video game fans. Like, we're the kind of people who still to this day just sleep less than we should because we stay up playing games. You know, we're those kind of guys. We love video games so much. And there's nobody else really in our area making games for a living because it's not video games as a medium or as an industry are not taken seriously down here. And we thought that was unfair, you know, like it's not cool. It's not fair that just because of a geographic situation, just because of the fact that we were born here, we cannot dedicate ourselves to the thing that we love. That's not fair. I mean, it's not fair that somebody, just because someone was born on the other side of a border, they can pursue a career in games and we cannot. You know, So we wanted to set out to make to change that, to basically to create an industry, to create a space, a location, a company where creativity and the local talent, the local creative people can actually pursue their dreams and so they can make something they really want to make and evolve and not get stuck on a boring manufacturing company just because they have to make a living, right? We want people to make a living doing what they love. And we wanted to change that. So that's why we set out to make a video game studio in here. And the company initially began making smaller projects for clients, for museums, for restaurants, that kind of like small web games and mobile games, you know, those kind of stuff. Because as you can imagine, there's nobody down here who can teach you how to make a video game. You know, like, yeah, we got programmers and that kind of stuff, but nobody from us actually took some degrees or anything related to video game development. Because there's one thing is to know how to code or how to draw. The other thing is how to actually make a game, you know, the process and coordinating all the different fields and areas involved in making a video game. So just that process in by itself is a very complicated beast to tackle, and that's why the company wanted to create smaller projects first, so we can get to know the process behind creating, developing, and publishing a game. But we always had this dream, this itch, you know, to make a game that us as gamers wanted to play, the kind of game that we want to get on our PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, whatever, and play for hours on end. So that itch was always there, and you know, there were some like concepts or some ideas more than concepts, but there was one point where one of our guys joked about the idea of, let's make a Zelda game based on the Tarahumara people, on this indigenous tribe. It was a joke initially, but as any joke, it stayed, you know, in between us. And we initially started to like the idea, you know, to think more seriously about that. The Tarahumara people are an indigenous tribe that are very well known here in our state. They live, there is this mountain area called the Sierra Tarahumara, which is named after them, and that's basically the Rocky Mountains in Mexico. So if you follow the Rocky Mountains in the US, you follow them into Mexico, they turn into this place called the Sierra Tarahumara, which is this very beautiful region that they inhabit. But many of them are also among us in the city. Chihuahua is a rather big city. I mean, it's a city that's close to 1 million of population, 1 million people. So it's a very sizable city, and they are among us on the streets. And you can see them walking with their traditional dresses and their ways of living. And they're very well known in here, but we did not really know much about their culture. I mean, we just know that they exist and how they dress, but we do not really know what else is going on with them. What's their story, their mythology, their culture, their lore, you know? So we just thought of, I don't know, let's do some research on them. Let's talk to them. Let's see if there's something cool to do with them. And sorry if I'm going too long with this, because it's quite a bit of a long story, but I'm trying to summarize it the more I can. We went into some research about these people, and we face a challenge in the fact that a lot of their stories are not really documented anywhere because they still rely on oral tradition. So it was a big challenge just getting their stories out of them. But we got in contact with cultural organizations from the government, cultural branches, and anthropologists and cultural experts, and we managed to get some meetings with Tarahumara elders in their settlements in the Sierra Tarahumara. We sat down with them, we made some contacts, we talked to them, and we got quite a bit of info, quite a bit of help, and we were impressed by the rich of their lore. They got some incredible stories to tell, some very cool mythology that nobody knows because nobody before us has ever taken the challenge of making a cool product with them. It is sad that people don't see books as a cool thing, I know, but the reason that we know a lot about Greek mythology and Nordic mythology, Vikings and all the stuff, is because someone took all of that and made cool movies, made cool games, made cool media about that thing. And we thought that we could do the same kind of thing with the people we have in here. And it's a very different story that nobody else knows about. So we just we asked for their blessing. The Tarahumara representatives were very much on board with us doing this game. And we even got help from some of them with some narration and that kind of stuff. And we just set out to make the game, you know, and make something cool with the things that they could tell us.
Yeah, it definitely turned out there's some of their so the narration is in their language, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely got a unique feel to it. And that's what makes it one of the things that makes it stand out so much, I think. Before I let the other guys chime in here really quickly, what was the most surprising thing you learned during your research about the culture that you did not know?
I mean, there are a bunch of different things. The first one, and this is a well-known thing, but it still surprises a lot. The Tarahumara people are very well-known for running long distances without getting tired. You know, they're some of the best marathon runners in the world. They do so without tennis shoes, without equipment. Like, they do so with sandals that they made, that they carve out of old tires and such. And they can run between in very dangerous locations. You know, like we use tennis shoes to run on flat surfaces, and even we get tired. They run with those sandals on very rocky surfaces without any issues, any problems. Like they seem to like even be like floating or something. They are impressive to look. And that was very surprising to us, just looking at that. And we learned that the way they used to hunt deer, and they still do some of them to this day, is they run after the deer until the deer gets exhausted.
Oh my god!
That is
impressive.
That's a real thing that some of them still do to this day. Like, they just run after the deer until the deer just can't go any longer, and They catch up to them. That's how they hunt. That's impressive, you know. That's
incredible.
No, I can barely run 100 meters.
If you guys want to learn a little bit more about them, there's a documentary I watched a while back at the Hot Docs Film Festival. It's called Goshen yeah. Film. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend checking it out.
They are very, very impressive. I mean, no one of us could actually accomplish even 1% of that, you know? Like, I can run right now to my nearest convenience store and I can barely get there, you know? And they're impressive. And it's super exciting. We also made a short documentary series. It's a 3-part video series called Behind Mulaka that you can watch now on YouTube, where we go a bit deeper into their story and why we picked their culture. But besides that, there are some very impressive creatures from the lore, like the Ganoko. The Ganoko, I think, is the one of the most striking ones. And it's this big rock creature that is it's the size of a small mountain in the lore. That creature is very, very impressive. And we could never imagine something like that belonging to a lore of an indigenous people that we see every day, but we do not know about. That was very impressive to learn that they have this impressive mythology in them.
Yeah, I mean, I think like we could elaborate more on the Ganoko a little bit, because it's one of these weird things that I've noticed is that they're kind of like a rock golem, which you kind of makes them very similar to a lot of Eastern European mythology in a way, and it's kind of strange to see two different continents in completely different, you know, areas that have sort of come to this sort of similar mythology. So I'm quite interested in the mythology of Mulaka even more, so like the demigods and all the creatures involved. So is there anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, it is said that the Tarahumara people are direct descendants of ancient Japanese ancient Japanese civilizations who just crossed the Bering Sea and just went into the Americas. It is said that Tarahumara are direct descendants of them because they actually have some sort of physical similarities to Asian people. And actually their language, the Tarahumara language, the tongue is kind of similar in sound to some Japanese words. So it is said that there's some descendants over there. And, you know, I mean, I'm not an anthropologist or anything like that, but there are a lot of traces and a lot of exposition of their culture and how the cultures of some indigenous tribes were taken to a different region with migration. And that's how a lot of those elements got into the Americas and into the Tarahumara mythology.
So I have a question. Actually, I have a lot of questions, but how long did it take for you to make the game? And I believe you started with a Kickstarter campaign, correct?
Oh yeah, don't even remind me that. Yeah, it was quite a long road. We began pre-production and research and concept, you know, that kind of stuff, the first step of the project, back in the end of 2014, because we were planning to run a Kickstarter campaign on March 2015. So we began back then. Because we wanted to, we didn't have a single penny in our pockets to make the game. And as you obviously know, making a game is expensive. Because, I mean, besides equipment and attending important events, well, I mean, making a game requires people. And people need to get paid because people need to pay rent. People need to eat. People need to pay stuff. So that's a lot of money because a PC and console game cannot be made in a month. It takes quite a while. So we needed funding to do that, and we faced a lot of challenges doing so. So we decided to run a Kickstarter campaign. Unfortunately, the Kickstarter campaign was not successful. However, with that Kickstarter, we actually managed to get a lot of media attention and exposure that we never imagined we would get, especially here in Mexico. Like, we got press in a way we really never imagined, in a way no other gaming thing in Mexico got before that. We got national TV everywhere. We got the biggest outlets talking about the project here in the country, and we got some cool outlets as well in the US and Europe. But even with that, we didn't get the funds that we needed. But with all of that attention, we sort of like went door by door with investors, businessmen, companies, we just went with this and telling them, like, hey, look at this. All of these people, you know many of these logos, all of them want this game. All of them talk about it. Support us. You know, we need the money. Let's make it happen. And that made it easier for us to eventually secure funding. We got a few government grants to make the game, but the vast majority of the funding for the game, we got it through the private investors in our city. Businessmen who were very excited about the idea of taking something very regional, very something very specific from our location, and take that to the big league, you know, to the big gaming industry. So we got that, and with the funding secure, we began full-time production early 2016. So that would be a bit over 2 years of production, but well over 3 years, including pre-production, concept research, and funding.
That's actually a pretty incredible way of going about it, that you guys persevered through that and were able to secure your funding that way.
I mean, we are stubborn, definitely, but the thing is that we really like games a lot, and that's the thing we want to do. And we knew that if we didn't get the funding, then option B for us on a personal level would be to take a job that we hated. To take a job on manufacturing cheap labor down here in Mexico that we didn't want to do. And even though we have very good college degrees and such, and we could get a well-paid job, that's not the thing that we wanted. We wanted to do something that we felt passionate about, you know?
That's definitely a story to get out there. I mean, any sort of inspiration you can give to people to persevere with things like that. It can be tough sometimes, as you've obviously found out, to follow a sort of passion like that, an artistic passion especially. But, you know, it can work out if you really stick to it. You definitely have to love it.
I think that applies for just about everything. Like, way too often, you know, I speak to a lot of people and they think they're going to become an overnight success. Like, just because of the internet, I'm going to find the following because of so-and-so reasons. And no, like, a lot of people who become successful, not just in the video game industry, but in any industry, they work for it for so long. Someone can blow up overnight because some YouTube video goes viral, sure, but that doesn't mean that they didn't work for like about 5-10 years prior before anyone took notice of who they are.
Absolutely. I don't believe personally in the concept of talent. We believe in hard work, you know, like there's nobody that just out of nowhere is good at writing or at, you know, like really anything in this field. Like everyone who does something gaming related or something, everyone who's successful is successful because they work their ass out, you know, like
right.
they really, really persevered. And I believe it's possible. Yes, we lost people in the way. I don't mean that they died or anything. But they just couldn't keep up with the pressure and with the costs of living and not having a single buck, you know.
Absolutely.
A lot of people, yes, some people left the company in the way, and that's totally acceptable. We get that. It's tough. And many of us in this process had a second job or were studying or anything, but like it's very hard, it's very difficult, you know, it pays off. It definitely pays off. And there's no such thing as an overnight success. Even if a popular YouTuber discovers your game and just plays it, that doesn't guarantee anything, you know, you still gotta work. Because even if that happens, well, now you got a lot of emails and comments to reply to, you know, and you gotta maximize the opportunity that you just got. You know, the bottom line is it's work, and you gotta work for it. You gotta work for success, and if you fail, I mean, failure is the best teacher. Therefore,
absolutely. Now, did you guys? Were you guys approached by Nintendo to put it on the Switch, or did you guys approach Nintendo yourselves, thinking it might be a good fit?
We approached them to the point I think they got tired of us. And they said yes.
That must be really difficult to program it onto the Nintendo Switch, though, because of all the different, you know, it goes on handheld, then it goes onto your TV, when you've got you have tabletop mode. I mean, there must have been some sort of things you'd have to do to cope with all of that.
Well, you know, fortunately, not really. We made the game, we went like with Unity, with the Unity engine, and the Unity has a native support for the Switch. So actually, making the build, making the port to the Switch was rather painless and seamless. I mean, yeah, it's work, absolutely, but it was way, way simpler than we initially thought. Nintendo made the architecture of the console and made the tools available for us, and Unity as well, very simple in a way that we didn't have any problems with the platform. The only real challenge we had with the Switch was optimization, because at the time we were working only with PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, which are more powerful consoles, and with PCs, and our 3D PCs are very beefy, you know, so we were working with powerful hardware, and then we got to scale of that, we got to optimize the code to make it run very well on the Switch, and that was a big challenge. But it definitely was simpler than we thought, to be honest.
The characters, the landscapes, the visuals is all clearly inspired from this like tribe of people, but what about the music itself?
That's true as well for the music. Our local musician, whose name is Diego Borja, he's a friend of us, he's a local musician here in Chihuahua, Mexico. He actually traveled to some locations of the Sierra Tarahumara, some locations from the game, and actually recorded sounds over there, because we wanted to capture the mood and feel of these locations. But most importantly, he actually was inspired by Tarahumara music, which I want to make clear that the Mulaka's music is not Tarahumara music, because Tarahumara music, it doesn't really fit well with a video game format, because one thing is to make music for anything, and one other thing is to make a music for a video game, because a video game soundtrack, it's constantly playing on a loop, and it has to be entertaining the whole time. You may spend a full hour on a level, and you will be listening to the same music, and you gotta keep liking it, you know? So what we did is we got inspired by Tarahumara music and sounds to make a video game soundtrack based off from that. And our musician actually even used traditional indigenous instruments to record some of the tracks of the game so that it can sound more authentic.
That's amazing. You know, I wish more video game developers had the time and resources and or just the idea to sort of like film a behind the scenes, like making of, like even if it's a 15-minute documentary to put on YouTube, because like for me, this is fascinating. Like we had, you know, a developer on just like last night, and just hearing you guys talk, like because I don't make video games, you know what I mean? I work in marketing. But just having this insight for me is like fascinating, because this is like, you know, sometimes when I read video game reviews, I don't think that people understand how much work goes into making a video game and how many people are involved and how many obstacles you face. And I don't know who was it that said this recently, but there was a video game developer that said, you know, I would say about 100% of video game developers only get about 50% of their ideas into the actual final product, because there's just so much you can do. So my question for you is, was there one thing that you wish you could have done with this game before it was released?
I think 50% is a lot. You know, like there are a lot of ideas that go on the table and have to be removed because of time constraints, resources constraints, or just because they're not working the way you thought them will. There are a lot of ideas that on paper sound very nice, but once you implement them onto the game, they don't work the way you intend. And that's a big challenge, you know, having to get rid of your idea because it's not working. That happened a lot to us on the development as well. There are a lot of mechanics that were in the game that didn't make the cut. We really don't want to spoil them, because we want to revisit some of them for the next projects. But what I can say, and that's something that's still pains me a bit, but it was a good decision, I think, is that the first versions of the renovation of each of the game's levels is that they were way, way bigger than what they are right now. Like the game's levels were more ambitious in that sense. We wanted to make this very big and vast terrains but it proved to be impossibly challenging to actually deliver a game like that with 8 people in the time we had. So we had to optimize a lot of that. But I would love to see, you know, some of that come back for our next project, definitely.
Is that suggesting open world for your next project by any chance? Like, slightly more? Because I guess Monaco was kind of level-based in a way. So would that be more open world for your next project?
I mean, we would like to explore some of those ideas. At this point, we are still looking at feedback. We are looking at what went well with the project, what went bad with the game, so we can assess what we will do next. But we of course, want to go bigger for the next project.
You know, it's interesting. I actually love the size of the levels in Malacca because they feel very manageable. It seems like there's plenty to do, and I don't feel like the game goes by too quickly. I think it's so well paced. One of the things that I've enjoyed about it. And I wanted to ask you. You brought up Super Mario 64 as your favorite game of all time. And as I've been playing Malacca, I've gotten shades of the Nintendo 64 from this. Was there any sort of? I mean, just in the feel of it, I feel like I'm playing a much more polished N64 game. In many ways, was there any kind of intent behind that to sort of recreate sort of a classic feel for this game?
Oh, definitely. And if there wasn't, through our age, our generation, that Nintendo 64 was the childhood, the childhood console of most of us at the end. So we grew up playing Mario 64. I think there's also a lot to say about Banjo-Kazooie. And there, the kind of level design of Banjo-Kazooie was very inspiring as well in making the Wars of Malacca. We definitely wanted to invoke that feeling of traditional gaming in the sense of challenge and the least hand-holding we could do, as traditional games used to do so back in that era.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are definitely, you have to figure things out in this game. And it could be a little bit of a shock to somebody who's only grown up on playing modern games where you are told everything. There are certainly times where I had to sit back and sort of puzzle something out. And I had to sort of shake the rust off my brain for that.
It was that big frog boss that made me just, I was running around that frog for about 20 minutes trying to figure out what to do with it. 20 minutes until I figured out how to use the bear to, you know, push the thing on it. Took me ages to figure out. It reminded me of when I was younger trying to play Ocarina of Time and trying to figure out how to deal with some of the bosses. That was a good memory for me.
Oh, yeah, the boss of the fourth area of Arareko, the lake level. Yeah,
that's the one, yeah. I can't pronounce the boss's name.
It is hard to pronounce because all of the names of the enemies and the levels are not even in Spanish. They are in Tarahumara in their own language, so they are complicated even for us. You know, so don't worry about that.
Now, are all the enemies inspired by Tarahumara lore?
Not only the enemies, like everything in the game, absolutely everything. Enemies, the locations, the potions, the upgrades, the attacks, like every story, every line of dialogue is inspired by
aren't the locations actual places as well?
They are absolutely. So we have a bunch of different locations in the game. Every single one of them is a location that you can right now come here and visit. Every single one of them. And some of them are even very touristic attractions. For instance, just to name an example, the city of Pakime, which is the second level of the game. Pakime is currently a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And it is known for being the very, very first city in all the American continent to have a complex water system.
Interesting. So is that where sort of the game's water puzzles sprung from?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. There's also one of the later levels in the game is based on the area called the Basasiachi Waterfall. And actually, we took we got inspired by the size of the waterfall, and the size of the waterfall in the game is a one-to-one representation of the real size of the real waterfall in the Sierra Tarahumara. So it's a one-to-one scale of that thing that we put in the game. So yeah, every single location is based on a real place, and even small details like the life. You know, the life bar is represented by these three symbols.
Mm-hmm.
There are three of those because Tarahumara people believe that men have three souls and women have four. So there are three of those because Mulaka is a male character, you know. So even those small details, and the Sukurama vision is a real thing from the lore as well. So everything in the game is inspired by an element from their mythology.
Oh, that makes sense then, that why when you take some damage, you can see a soul go up from your body.
That's correct.
Absolutely. That's very cool. Very cool.
So has anyone from the Tarahumara tribe, played this game? Like, have they seen the game?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, we got in contact with them when we began with the project because we wanted to get their blessing. But we got the help of a member of a tribe called Mr. Martin Makawi, and he is the narrator of these cutscenes in the game, and he has visited us, and he has seen the game in action. And now, as soon as all this post-launch madness fades away a bit, thanks to the Switch and the portability of that console, we want to travel back to some of the settlements and take the game to them and let them see what it is. Because a fun fact, and something that we didn't think about initially, is that how do you explain a video game to somebody who has never seen one, you know? Video games are something that we know and understand, but a lot of these people, many of these people, have never ever seen a video game in their lives. A lot of them have not even seen a phone or a tablet or something like that. How do you explain this kind of things to them? And I think that there's something very rich and exciting to tell about that. We really want to take the game to them, and even if they won't be able to play because they haven't played a single game in their lives, we want to see, you know, the reaction. But we know that a couple of our friends in the Sierra Tarahumara locations and back up in the mountains have actually shown some of the Tarahumara people the documentary series we made, which includes footage and concepts of the game. And we know they told us that they are like floored and impressed with that. We want to take the game to them, definitely, for sure.
I can imagine it would be really fascinating for them to see a visual representation of things that they've only been imagining for so long. That's got to be very cool. And you guys pulled off the visuals so nice. Was the visual style settled on because mainly because of budgetary reasons, you know, resource reasons? Because it works really, really well.
The main reason for the low poly visual style stems from the own artistic style of the Tarahumara. The Tarahumara people are not known for artistic representations. However, they do have some drawings. I don't know if you got to the third level of the game. The third level of the game is called Resort Recubi. It's a translation of the Cave of the Dolls. And this is a real wall that has some of these rocky paintings on them. And these paintings are made by Tarahumara people. And you can see, because we actually represented them as they are on the game. And you can see that these drawings are very simple in a way, and very like polygonal. They are the simple lines. And the closest thing to that in a 3D thing would be a low poly visual style. We believe that a low poly style is a 3D representation of the way they draw. So we thought that would be the best way to portray their deities, because they are already drawing these creatures in this mythology, and this style is make them 3D while keeping the way they draw them.
Yeah, that's very cool. And for anybody who gets to that cave, there's a very cool moment and nice little puzzle there that happens at that cave, the cave drawings.
So with the final boss in the afterlife, is that what inspired that about the in the mythology? What sort of inspires the afterlife bit? Because that was quite fascinating. When it was the heart of the boss, like you attack the sort of heart, I think. Could you go into detail on that.
Yeah, but without going into too much spoilers, because I mean that's
I've already spoiled it.
It's a legend. It's a legend of the Taregori. Taregori is this creature that stems from corruption, foulness in the world. The ending explains a lot about that. I don't want to mention that because it's obviously a spoiler thing. But yeah, it was obviously a tale and a story that we wanted to tell. In this location, you can see to your left, to your right, the sun and the moon. Because the gods that want to destroy the world are actually the sun and the moon, so that's why you see them on the sides while you're battling this boss. So yeah, it's a very evil, or it's a creature that really has a presence and makes you have a sense of fear, you know. And it's sort of like the demon kind of equivalent, probably in their culture, but it's a creature that really stems from corruption and foulness. You will learn its origin and story as soon as you finish the game. That's the ending. I don't want to spoil it.
I can vouch it's a very frustrating boss. It took me quite a while to beat that boss.
it is the toughest fight in the game by far. Yeah. Definitely.
I guess my last question is, in terms of marketing, so, I mean, you got the internet, but do you rely on a company like, for example, Nintendo to hopefully market your game, or are you sort of, like, mm-hmm. responsible for pushing the way the game is going to get marketed in terms of, like, the poster art, the game, any of the game art that's released online, et cetera, et cetera?
We are 100% responsible for handling marketing assets and all that stuff. However, I think that every indie studio, every small studio who has to position themselves in the industry really has to look for the biggest amount of opportunities that we can possibly get from the big guys, you know, the big partners, because we do our best to market the game, but we do not have the push or the PR power, obviously, that someone like Nintendo has. But part of my job, especially, is to develop a close partnership, a good relationship with Nintendo, with Xbox, with PlayStation, and get the most help we can from them to position the game, you know. And we got a lot from all of them, but especially from Nintendo. I mean, Nintendo offered us a position underneath the showcase last year, and Nintendo, their PR machine, really gave us a big boost. So, I mean, ultimately, the marketing of our game is our own responsibility, but part of marketing an indie game is creating a relationship with your partners and looking for opportunities with them, definitely. I think that's probably the biggest, the most important thing that you gotta do besides the press and PR, you know, like managing a relationship with these big guys and getting help from them, because it's a big and challenging industry.
And it paid off. I mean, I first noticed Malacca at the Nindy Showcase, and that was where it caught my eye. And it was one that at least it was on our radar after that. So those sorts of opportunities are invaluable if you take advantage of them.
Definitely. That's the point where the biggest amount of people knew about the game, I think, back in the Nindy Showcase. And I mean, a quick story that I can tell is that when we got the call from Nintendo offering us that space underneath the showcase, and when they gave us all the info on the Nindy Showcase, the Nindies at Night thing, the Nindies Arcade Boot Effects West, like all that on the same call. When we ended the call, we just stood up. We were very close to even crying, and we just hugged. You know, like it was so emotional, so surreal that we could get that. And I think that's a very important thing in our story, you know, getting that relationship with these companies, definitely.
Yeah, and you guys delivered a great product. I've really enjoyed Malacca so far, and I can't wait to explore. Each new world is so different from the last, and it keeps getting more and more beautiful as I go on. I guess my last question for you would be, this is kind of a preservation of a culture in a way. It's almost like, you know, a work that is keeping something alive for future generations. Is there? Do you want to say anything about what you guys are doing? You know, to sort of further that for the Tarahumara.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we want to tell stories that nobody else can. I believe that every small studio that's looking to get a position or get their flag on this industry has to ask themselves, what can we offer to the industry that nobody else is already offering? As a gamer, why would I want to play your game and not any other game out there? Because there are a lot of exciting and cool games releasing every single day. So why would I want to play this game and not any other game, you know? So that just comes to the main point of innovation. Like, what can I do that nobody else is doing? So the cool story, a different thing like Tarahumara Mythology, I think it's a very cool thing that we were able to pull off that nobody else is telling about. And with that, we want to achieve some cultural preservation because, I mean, just the fact that we are making mainstream media product based on the lore, I think it says a lot. We are reaching a bunch of people with this mythology that have never ever heard of them before. Because nobody, I mean, there's not a single game based on Tarahumara mythology. So just raising awareness of their existence, I think that's a lot already. However, we want to do more. So we are definitely, we'll be donating a portion of the game's earnings to organizations, NGOs who actually work on the preservation of their culture and the preservation of the Sierra Tarahumara. We are in talks with a couple of them to get into the specifics and that stuff, but we want to give back not only in awareness and in marketing, you know, of their stories, but in more intangible efforts on the preservation of what they can offer to the world.
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, it's games like this, it's things like this that cause people to go look stuff up online. Yeah. They want to learn more, especially when they learn that it's based on real life stuff. And that's what's so cool about this is it gives you the opportunity to go and explore even more of that world by yourself just by researching it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Adolfo, we want to thank you so much for being here. That was great. We're grateful for you to come. You shared some great stories, and we've all enjoyed playing Mulaka. I won't speak for the other guys, but I know I have.
I love it. What are you talking about? Yeah, it's great. If you haven't picked up the game yet, do so. There's a lot of great indie games to play on the Nintendo Switch, and Mulaka. Wait a minute, the game actually made our list of the best 30 games released year one, right?
I voted for it.
I believe it did, yes.
I think we all voted for it. Yeah, so it's, I mean, look, wow. That's an amazing lineup of games. Nintendo released over 350 games year one. You're talking about games like Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, and this game is on that list. And this is coming from a bunch of people who play way too many Nintendo games, especially on the Switch. So it's an amazing game. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Not a problem at all. I mean, it's my honor. I love talking about not only about our game, but about games in general. Like, games are cool, you know? Games are a cool thing. And I really love talking about them. And thanks a lot for playing the game, for supporting our project. And really glad you like Mulaka. And at any time you have any other questions, I mean, you got my contact info, our studio social media sites on Twitter. You can find us as Lienzo MX. That's Lienzo with a C, Lienzo MX, on Facebook at facebook.com/LienzoMexico. And we are always available to chat with you guys, answer any questions, discussions. We love engage you with a community. So thanks a lot again for having me. It's a big honor.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we can probably provide a link to that, the YouTube, the documentary as well that you guys made.
Cool.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. That sounds good. Rick, since it's the end of the podcast, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter. Oh God, it's complicated, guys. Goomba Stomp. The last O is spelt with the number zero. It's a long story. And, like us on Facebook, follow us on Tumblr, Pinterest, Instagram. We're all over the place. But yeah, GoombaStomp.com.
And Nintendo editor James, I'm guessing that we can find you editing some Nintendo stuff.
You can find me on Goomba Stomp, writing and editing all the Nintendo stuff. And you can find me on Twitter with an equally complicated Twitter name called Papadopoulos888.
What? Oh my goodness. Could you repeat that, James?
Papadopoulos888. Okay. It's basically, there's George Harrison plays a character in Life of Brian, and he's there for like 2 seconds, and his name's Papadopoulos, and that's where it comes from.
That's extremely random, but very cool because I'm a big Beatles fan. And you can find me on GoombaStomp.com as well. I am the film editor, so most of my work will be under our Sorted Cinema section, but I do write about video game stuff as well. And you can find me on Twitter @SortedCinema. Thanks so much, guys, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.